Cattle in northern Australia are being shot because graziers say they can't feed or sell the animals. Drought, debt, a depressed live export market are creating the worst conditions in living memory. From the north of the country, Caitlin Gribben has this special report.
We're going to have to do those potties.
Fill the troughs up in the weaner pen.
Oh, yeah,
got to do all the weaner troughs because it's got all those potties in the yard.
Outback Australia, a day's drive away from restaurants, supermarkets and lattes. This remote part of the country is famous worldwide, famous for its magical sunsets, unusual wildlife and, of course, those iconic cattle stations as large as some European countries.
They've got to be tail lifted. Never stop. Daylight and after dark.
Because if we're in by 8 o'clock, it's magical.
Sisters Chanel and Deborah are talking the way farmers do and organising tonight's meal like any family does.
Oh, it'll be me. I cook dinner most of the time. So.
Because I absolutely hate cooking. I have everyone convinced I can't cook. And, you know, it really can work really well.
This is exactly the kind of stuff you'd expect in any Aussie home, until it's not.
It's very hard when you're counting down to the last cent and you're looking at it and saying, I can't feed that cow because I can't afford it. You're out of money.
Have you had to make difficult decisions if you haven't been able to feed those animals?
Yep. Yeah, and if you can't feed them, you've got to shoot them because that's the kindest thing you can do.
And you've done that?
Yep. Yes, we have.
And at that, Deborah blesses herself with the sign of the cross. Praying is all that's left, she says. Beef industry leaders have been warning this would happen. Over summer, much of northern Australia didn't receive traditional monsoonal rain. That meant grass didn't grow, so in parts there's nothing for cattle to eat. Graziers say they'd buy food, like hay, but they can't afford it for a few reasons. Firstly, live exporting to countries like Indonesia reduced enormously in the past couple of years. That's flooded the domestic cattle market with too many beasts to sell, pushing prices as low as $20 a head in Queensland recently. Drought's also declared in parts of the north, and farmers say they can't pay off their bank loans.
Thanks very much, everybody, for attending here today. I'd like to welcome mainly all the cattlemen and their families here today. You're probably the only ones not getting paid here today.
A cattle crisis meeting was held in northwest Queensland last week about those issues.
I was asked a little while ago what would be the mood in the room by one of the media, and I said, well, it's probably fairly sombre because they're not sure what they're going to get out of this.
The federal and Queensland agriculture ministers were almost begged to provide financial help. Neither committed to that. I'm told even the so-called rich people are in trouble. The country's largest cattle producer, the Australian Agricultural Company, has taken a major hit to its profits. Its competitor, the Northern Australian Pastoral Company, reported a loss for the year to December 2012 and is now looking at selling its assets. And one of the country's biggest graziers is calling this a crisis. There is discussion at the moment of people shooting cattle.
Yeah, I don't doubt that will happen because banks are pulling up with money. They won't lend any more money to feed.
Malcolm McClymont owns properties throughout Queensland. He's a leader in the beef industry, someone you wouldn't usually expect to hear speaking personally about really tough times.
Anyone that's running cattle at the moment is running below production. Eventually, over a period of time, they'll all go broke. People have got to sell the cattle, otherwise they're going to die at home. And that's the big crunch.
Many in the beef industry are comparing the current scenario to 1974, when world beef prices collapsed.
This is worse. We got $25 a head for cattle in 74. Like a Toyota you could buy for $3,000. Now we're going to pay $75,000 for a Toyota. You would have to sell twice as many cattle now to buy that vehicle as what you did in 74.
It was horrible. You had no idea that the downturn was coming.
Elsa Morton and her husband were running a cattle station in 1974.
If you had a beast that was bogged and was down because it was poor and weak, it had to be destroyed.
You mean shot?
Yes, shoot it. And then you had to go home and pretend that nothing happened.
Morning, Steve. You're just reading these cattle, Steve?
Yeah, then we're weighing. Yep.
There's already evidence of the tough conditions. John Wharton is the mayor of the Richmond Shire in northwest Queensland. Last year, he was ordered by receivers to leave the property owned by his family for nearly 100 years. The circumstances surrounding that is an issue that's before the federal court. But for now, John Wharton is working as a livestock agent, living in town, not on the cattle station.
No, I'm not on that anymore. Yeah, no, I'm just doing what I've got to do. Still the mayor of Richmond, and I'm doing this, and yeah, it's good.
How difficult has this time been with all these factors, I suppose, come into play?
Oh, well, I'm out of it now. A lot of people in the bush have had sleepless nights worrying about what's going to happen. I can tell them there's a better life and you don't need a lot of money to have a good time.
So, is this a better life than being out on the property?
I'll wait for the federal court to make their decision.
And the stories of out-of-control debt aren't hard to find.
One family purchased a number of farms at a high point of the market, $30 million debt, and their recent revaluation of their toll assets was about $12 million.
Grant Fawcett heads up a recently formed group that's worried about the social cost of the cattle industry collapsing. He says farmers have to start taking responsibility for how much money they owe.
The live export ban cops a lot of flack, and that's one reason, but there was a real increase in land values in the early 2000s. The banks came along and said, well, we'll loan you 50% of your asset base, and so people took on more debt.
But there were producers who obviously signed those loan documents who made that decision to borrow that much money.
In the end, they're the people who signed the documents. So the bank's not there with their arm up their back saying, you will take this money. They actually decide to take it.
There are hundreds of Northern Australian cattle producers who say their pain was avoidable. They blame the federal government's 2011 live cattle export suspension with Indonesia, a trade that's plunged into decline since that decision. But that crisis was accompanied by a strong Indonesian push to self-sufficiency, to the detriment of Australian live trade.
This is just paid to be mainly just used for most of our weaners and stuff like that, a few heifers that we're going to send out live export, but not much of that happened this year, so I've been told there's going to be no market for the heifers at all this year.
Towards the Northern Territory border, Ray Martin owns Broadwater Station. Properties out here are big, really big. They start at the 40,000 hectare mark, or 100,000 acres by the old scale. And without a full-strength live exporting market, Ray Martin says many in the north can't stay on their properties.
I'd say a lot of people go broke. A lot of communities will suffer because it's the people on the places who spend the money in towns and things like that. Yeah, it's pretty hard when you can't control what you, well, you don't see. With live export not being available as an option to take the overflow, it's just wrecked our southern market. So hence it's not only the people in the live export industry copping the pain, it's right through the whole industry in Queensland and Northern Territory too. Your values are gone 30%.
So 6 months, mate?
No, 12 months.
12 months?
Yep.
Check savings or credit?
Saving.
The crisis spreads much further than just in the paddocks. The port towns that service the live exporting industry are also hurting. Alan Gurney is the postmaster in Corumba, a town at the top of Queensland's Gulf, where local and Northern Territory cattle are usually exported.
All our rural customers desperately need somewhere to send their cattle. So you're talking about people that aren't getting employed because there's no cattle to move. And certainly to the, obviously the business owner, that's got to be really hurting them. So we're really struggling.
And sisters Chanel and Deborah, who run an outback cattle station together, say they'll also continue to struggle unless the weather breaks or prices improve. How many animals have you shot because you haven't been able to feed them?
Too many. Too many. I wouldn't say it. It is cheaper, yes, for a 30 or 40 cent bullet than what it is to put them on a truck.
And this is how you defend that decision to shoot, is that financially you just can't do it? You can't keep the animals?
Financially, yes. If I can't feed them, I've got no choice but to be kind. And if they haven't got no food or no quality of water, you're just going to let it die a slow death of 3 or 4 days in a paddock with the crows and the eagles picking their eyes out? Or do you take the bullet, put it in your gun, pull the trigger?
Cattle station owners Chanel and Deborah, ending Caitlin Gribbon's report. When four young scientists joined forces to develop a new test for bovine tuberculosis more than 30 years ago, they could never have comprehended the significance their work would have on human health. This week, the team were finally recognised for their work, taking out the prestigious Australian Academy of Technological Sciences and Engineering Award for outstanding application of science. Now, it goes back to the multi-million dollar cattle industry campaign to eradicate tuberculosis and brucellosis from Australia's cattle herd. That started in 1970 and took 30 years to achieve. It was a massive undertaking, particularly in northern Australia, where feral cattle and buffalo had to be shot from helicopters as it simply wasn't possible to herd them and test them. And the science for the test then was more than 100 years old. Dr. Paul Wood was approached by the industry to develop a new test for TB, and the rest, as they say, is history.
I remember when I got the early results, I had about 22 animals. I said, look, it looks promising, but I need to do a big trial. I need $1 million. And they went, okay.
Which in 1984.
It was a huge amount. I didn't think at all they would back us. But they stuck to it and they said, look, we need to know whether this is going to work.
At what point did you get recognition that this was really good, it did work, and it was simple to use?
Look, I think it took a long time, to be honest, to get final recognition because people were very comfortable using the technology. And it really was, it's a heroic effort. You tested TB in the field. So when we changed the whole game and we moved it to a blood-based, a lab-based test, there was a lot of caution about it. So it took a long time. We did trials all through Australia. In the end, we did trials all around the world. And of course, when this eventually moved into the human field, the same thing. So we had to do a lot of convincing. And that's why I think, we're looking 3 decades later, we're seeing enormous impact around the world. We did a great job with TB. We were finally declared free in 2002. But of course, New Zealand with its possums, England with the badger. A lot of countries have another host in there. In South Africa, you've got issues with lions and elephants. It's quite amazing with this disease. So it's taken a long time to convince people this new technology was better than the old technology.
Tell us about one poor dairy cow in Victoria.
I was looking for infected herds and a veterinarian contacted me and said, look, I've got a dairy herd in Victoria. I think, there's a lot of disease in there. So we bled all these animals and I processed the samples.
When you say bled them, you take a blood test.
We took, we took
10. Sounds rather gruesome.
Yeah, exactly, 10 mils of blood. I ran my assay, independent from him running the old assay. And when I rang him up, he was really apologetic. He said, sorry, Paul, there's only one infected animal. And I said, yeah, I know, number 53. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, well, that's what I got in my results.
The test works. And the cow had a name?
It had a name. So when we acquired that animal, it had TB and its name was Dream Illusion, which I think was maybe an omen for the work we were doing.
I guess sad ending for the cow, but put out of her misery.
Well, this is the thing with TB. In humans you can treat it, but of course in cattle, those animals need to be removed from the herd to protect all the other animals.
Now, TB is an insidious disease. We don't think of it much here in Australia, apart from in movies when the likes of Nicole Kidman and Moulin Rouge die of it. But it is still a major disease across the world. So what sort of significance has this test had for the treatment in humans?
We still have, say, 2 million deaths around the world from TB. A lot of them are young children. In Africa, with the issue of HIV, this is a very nasty combination. You've got HIV suppressing the immune system, and then you've got TB spreading in those individuals. So it's still a very severe disease. In Australia, we still see it in some of our homeless shelters. It's an issue in prisons.
Australia?
Yeah, it's not a major issue. Anywhere you've got people in close proximity, I don't think the cattle industry could have ever dreamed, we never could have dreamed what would have happened from that early funding that they gave to CSIRO to what we see today, where you've got, the people like the WHO, obviously, are very important in managing this disease. It's an exciting thing as a scientist to finally see something you had an idea about all those years ago out there. It's one of the drivers for me, and I know for my colleagues as scientists, to see your ideas turn in. And it's a great thrill as a scientist when you see that. I can still remember the night I diagnosed that one animal. That was a moment that burned in my mind because we don't ever have a lot of those as scientists. So you've got to live off them for a long time. Mm.
Congratulations. And I suspect many of us are quite jealous to think you've left a real mark on the world. Not many of us can say that.
Yeah, I think it's something that I like to, when I talk to kids about science, it's one of the things you can do, Science, you can leave a mark on the world and, it's an exciting part of being a scientist.
Dr. Paul Wood, who with 3 other scientists has won the Academy of Technological Sciences Award for outstanding application of science for developing a test for the deadly tuberculosis, firstly in cattle, then in humans. That's a Country Breakfast for this week. Details of all our stories, rural news, photos, and how to get a podcast of the program are on our website, abc.net.au/rural. Thanks for joining the Rural Team this morning, and a big thank you to our technical producer, Angela Grant. On RN, I'm Libby Price. Talk to you soon.